This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Frieda Liu. You're listening to Raise Your Game. I'm here with Robin Wade. He calls himself the fearless business coach. Now, he's a husband and father to two young girls with a passion to help business owners set fearless goals and achieve great success. As mentioned, he is a business coach, a regular speaking at various business events, and best-selling author of two books, including the recent popular release, Take Your Shot, which we'll be talking about. He puts his decade of business leadership experience to work, coaching clients to reach their goals. So I want to talk a little bit about the book, and you set the premise of the book on a story about this guy called Russ. Tell me about Russ.
Well, Russ was actually, it's based on a true story. So Russ was one of my first coaching clients, and he was a struggling golf professional with a young family himself. And basically there's a number of different things going on for him. So just to kind of paint a very quick picture of it, He sold golf lessons by the hour, and quite often on a Saturday, for example, if it was raining, he would show up to the golf course and have 8 lessons booked. But if it rains, there's an awful lot of rain in the UK. Yeah. So and he was collecting cash at the end of the lesson. So ergo, if he wasn't doing lessons, he wasn't making any money. Yeah. And so we kind of what it came down to is the fact that he hadn't really designed his business properly. He hadn't thought about what sort of questions he was asking his clients and his prospects before they came on board as clients. So he wasn't qualifying them properly. Mm. And one of the things which we did was started to look at, well, why do people want golf lessons? It's some people do it just for fun. Mm. But actually, most people want some kind of a result out of it. And as I was going through this process with Russ, it actually started to pave the way for the Fearless Business, you know, my coaching program and the process which I take a lot of my clients through now. But as a result, kind of, you know, but I guess it's only 100-page book, so it's actually quite short. But by the time you get to page 76, I do start to use artistic license and kind of embellish. We kind of go into his the goals that he'd laid out for himself.
Right.
Which actually, funny enough, he's now managed to achieve some of those. So it's things like he wanted to, once he'd grown his own golf professional business locally, he wanted to get out and start teaching other golf professionals, you know, the same methodology. He wanted to get out and do speaking. He wanted to go overseas and do speaking gigs and workshops and things like that. So he's actually started to do elements of that now since we just set out those goals and actually wrote them into the book.
Right. Now, okay, some of the takeaways from your book was to change perceptions of your own business so that you can get out of your own way. Very interesting. What are the misconceptions then?
One of the biggest misconceptions about business is that it's like this, it's a really scary thing. So hence the term fearless. And actually being fearless in business isn't about like being reckless. It's actually about fearing those things in business ever so slightly less so that you can step outside your comfort zone.
Right.
So, you know, think about it. On the plains of Africa, you know, there are people who are in, you know, real danger. They go down to the river to get their water and they could potentially get eaten by a crocodile.
Right.
You know, but in business, for most business owners, like the worst thing that can happen is we lose a bit of money. And actually, like, that's not a bad thing because we learn from that and there's growth.
Hmm.
So, you know, people play business way too safely. And I believe if you've kind of set out what we call fearless goals and stretch yourself and don't be afraid of failure, then you can actually achieve really great things. With your not just your business, but also your life as well, because there's obviously a natural crossover.
Right. And it's a very interesting, fearless does not equal to reckless. And I think a lot of people do put these two words, you know, synonymously.
That's it. Absolutely. And it's, you know, people will, being reckless is going and spending every last penny you've got on Facebook ads when you don't really understand Facebook. Does that make sense?
Right.
Like, or if you haven't really identified who your target market is for your business, or it's kind of putting all of your eggs into one basket.
Hmm.
Whereas actually what we do is we teach people to kind of take much more calculated risks. Hmm. You still got to take risk in order to create that stretch.
Right.
But yeah, we don't want to do anything reckless that's going to jeopardize our future.
Right. So when you talk about fearless and brave goals, it's a bit like the big, hairy, audacious goals, right? And how do I know these are the right goals?
Oh, well, that's a really great question, actually. Fundamentally, you don't. But what we do is go through a process. It's a 3-step process. So actually the thinking for this came from Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And he basically talked about 3 things that you need in order to achieve success. And so the three things which I kind of took from the book is, first of all, like, you have to have a goal in mind. Now, most people, and my experience is obviously in the business world, so one of the first questions I always ask people is, do you have a business plan? And believe it or not, 76% of people score themselves 4 or less on a scale of 1 to 10 for their business plan.
Right.
27% of people don't even have a business plan.
Right.
And that's scary. It's just like they've just, you know, their mum, sister, dad, aunt, whatever, has said, hey, that's a really great idea. You should set up a business. And they go, yeah, I'll go and set up a business. But they have no idea why they're doing it. They have no idea what their objectives are for that business or what they're going to get out of, what they want to get out of it. So I believe that every business owner should have some kind of a goal, but actually keep it nice and simple. Like one major overarching goal, but keep it simple. So it could be, for example, earning £10,000 a month.
Right.
So just as a really simple goal. And if, say, for example, the average client is worth £1,000 a month to them, so they need 10 clients at £1,000 a month. So what you can do once you've created that goal is reverse engineer it. And at that point, we can then start to build up a little map, a journey which kind of steers us towards that goal of activities that we need to do, like no matter how big or small. So the challenge is, though, in the business world, like there is, you know, I think about, like, when, you know, when I started my first business, actually, it was back in 2000. Facebook didn't exist. Instagram didn't exist. YouTube was barely in existence because broadband speeds were so slow and like nobody could load videos anyway. You know, all of this technology was in its infancy or just didn't exist.
Right.
So it's a very different landscape. And now 20 years on, you know, A, there's 10 times the number of businesses today than there was 20 years ago. So it's made it 10 times harder to get found. But also in that process, like, the world has just become that much more confusing, the online world. So people have found it, they find it really hard to make conscious decisions. They don't really trust their intuition and their gut. And that's the fearless bit, I guess.
Right.
Is when you're faced with making a decision, no matter how big or small. So it could be like, if you're going through your to-do list, so you've got like emails you need to answer, telephone calls you've got to make, maybe doing some social media posts, doing a video or whatever it is. You've got to ask yourself, is this activity going to get me closer to my goal or not?
Right.
And more often than not, you can't answer it explicitly. So that's the bit where you don't know whether this is going to get you to goal or not. But if you trust your gut and you say, well, actually, my gut's telling me yes, I'll go for it. And so then, you know, that we do some social media posts, then we start to get a bit of interest. We get some likes, comments, shares. People start to engage in a conversation with us. We pull them into a consultation process. Eventually we have that. We're able to put our offer out there and then we sell something. And so that's one step towards our goal of, say, 10 clients a month, for example. But most people just, they can't, because they have no idea what the goal is. It's a bit like if you were getting into a car and doing a 1,000-mile journey. Nowadays, you punch your postcode into a sat-nav.
Right.
You know, way back when, if you were sailing on a ship, you'd get your sextant out and you'd look at the stars and you'd kind of have a process of navigation. But imagine getting into a car and driving 1,000 miles without putting the postcode in. You'll end up
somewhere.
You'll end up somewhere, but in the totally the wrong place. It won't be where you intended to get to. So the goal is a bit like punching the postcode into the sat nav. And then you just let the sat nav, the process, like work out the route to get you there. So we've got the goal, we've got the activities that are going to get us to the goal. That's the second thing. And the final thing, and this is where most business owners, like, this is the biggest misconception, I think, that I'm going to share today. So this is worth listening to. Because the internet has made it so easy for us to start a business up or to build an audience, to whatever it might be, the internet has made everything really easy. We've become wholly reliant on it. And like I said, because there are now 10 times the number of businesses out there, actually it's become 10 times harder for us to get found online. So we're putting all this stuff out, adding to the noise, but it's actually 10 times harder to
be heard.
You know, so we think it's easy. We think this whole business thing should be easy. We've got the internet, global marketplace, like, you know, world domination. But the reality is actually it's 10 times harder than it was 20 or 30 years ago, pre-internet age. And there's 10 times, like not even 10 times, 100 times more apps and things like that that we can use to grow our businesses and to communicate with people. So actually, it's when you think about it like that, the moment you know that it's going to be really hard, if you just have really solid foundations and have a really strong desire to achieve your goal, when you kind of get knockbacks, I did a post on Facebook yesterday and put some money behind it because I was just testing a headline. And I got a load of people that, like, haters. Like, I got it wrong. And I'll openly put my hands up and say, I got it wrong. It's okay. Hmm. But there's some really aggressive people out there. Thing is, I've been in this game for long enough. My roots, my foundations are solid enough.
Right.
I'm like, for me, it's like binary. It's like, I get people who like it. I get people who don't like it. I don't listen to the comments.
Hmm.
If that makes sense, unless it's constructive kind of feedback, unless people are saying, well, actually you got the title wrong, or you got, you know, if it's constructive feedback, because I'm going through a process of like working out what works for my business. Does that make sense?
Mm. So you know, you talk about how people are being totally reliant on the internet though, but so you still can do, there's still other business strategies which go beyond the internet. There's still, we shouldn't lose track of the fundamentals of business, and social and online media is just a tool if we really want to think about it.
Well, you know, we're chatting now on a podcast,
right.
You know, that's going to go out to, you know, however many sort of thousands of people potentially around the world.
Right.
That's great. Mm. But that same process of communication can happen on a human-to-human basis.
Right.
We can still turn up to networking meetings and have conversations with people. We can still go and meet our friends in a, you know, for a coffee and talk about business together and have that sort of mastermind thing on a, you know, human-to-human sort of level.
Mm.
We can still go out and position ourselves as authority figures and get speaking gigs. Mm. And rather than just be attending a networking event, we can lead one.
Right.
So there's still this, all of these things, you know, and advertising, you know, there's still physical advertising. So it's not just about digital advertising. You know, you can still advertise in magazines or put banners up or things like that. You don't have to have, it doesn't all have to evolve, you know, revolve around the online sort of landscape. So there are ways of kind of taking it sort of a bit, I like to call it like back to the old school. We're not talking old school, we're talking like 20, 30 years ago. It's not that long ago in the grand scheme of things.
Right. I'm here with Robin Waite talking about his book, Take Your Shot. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. You're listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Brave, free, Malaysia, BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is Raise Your Game. Good morning. Frida Liu here. I'm speaking to Robin Waite, the fearless business coach, he calls himself. And we're talking about his second book, Take Your Shot. Just still back, before I get to the book, you know, like for you, you were working as a system analyst for a medical device company. How did you get out of that? You know, what got you on this different path?
I started that job when I left school at 18. So this is the first, one of the first businesses that I started out as a systems analyst working there. And then I ended up pretty much running the business. So we took that business from 2000 to 2004. We took it from 850,000 turnover to 1.5 million turnover.
Mm.
But in the process, and this is, I guess, one of my first biggest learnings in business where it started to have an impact on the people. So we actually had, when I first started working there, about 15 members of staff. By the end of 2004, when I left, we only had 8.
Mm.
And actually, the people who left, it was a direct result of the work I was doing, because I was building systems and processes that were making the business run more efficiently. So we didn't need the seven other team members anymore.
Hmm.
And I had a realization in sort of 2004 that actually I didn't want to be responsible for making people redundant. I actually wanted to go the other way and employ people. So I started sort of buying and selling laptops just to get my foot into running specifically my own business that I owned. And I had a really successful summer. I made about 40 grand profit cash, like buying and selling secondhand laptops.
Right.
Believe it or not. Well, they were grade 2 listed. They weren't quite secondhand. They're, you know, newish. They just had like a hard drive replaced or something like that. But they were premium grade. So I was selling them for 4 or 5K. Mm. Again, this is like back in 2004. And I had an agreement with the boss. I said, you know, you're not going to pay me any more money, because he was great at building the products, but not very good as a business owner. So I said, look, I'm going to do some other stuff on the side. And he said, well, that's cool, so long as it doesn't interfere with your work here.
Mm.
And remember, he walked into the office one day and he caught me doing a deal for 40 laptops.
Mm.
So worth a lot of money. And he'd just been on a trade mission, spent tens of thousands of pounds on a trade mission to Asia, because we were looking to outsource some products, and had gone and blown a load of money on his Zomax card and wasn't very happy. And he walked in and said, I'm not going to let you do that anymore. You can't use company resources. So I just quit. I was just like, cool, I'm making loads of money now anyway, so I don't need to worry about it. Unfortunately, literally, I handed him my notice, went into this like full time, and then overnight, the bubble burst with tech. So those laptops I've been selling for $4,000 or $5,000 obviously exploded onto the market, and other people discovered them, and people were selling them for like £800, £1,000, and there was just no profit left.
Right.
So I did what any sensible sort of 22-year-old does with $40,000. I bought a couple of cars and went on a holiday to Florida. And whilst I was out there, one of the guys who got made redundant got in touch, and he said, "Robin, I've got this great idea for a business. You know, the internet's kind of like booming. Everybody's asking me about websites. I know you're doing tech stuff, like, because I was doing other stuff with IT as well, and building the old website and things like that. So he said, should we just get together and set up a business?" So we basically, that was it. Whilst I was out in Florida in 2004, February, in fact, I remember the day, it's February the 14th, Valentine's Day in 2004. And so we set it up, and actually we ran that marketing agency for 12 years, sold it, not for very much money. But that was kind of like, that got me into the whole marketing online sort of game, understanding about kind of people's desires, their wants and needs, the importance of kind of, you know, I'd watched the whole sort of internet bubble grow and how people like understood how people were adopting it and things like that. And then one day my business partner turned around and said, "Robin, I don't want to build websites anymore." So I was like, right, okay, well, so I do the biz dev and sales and the accounts. I build websites as well myself, and I do X, Y, and Z. And I said, "The only thing you do in the business is build websites. What are you going to do?"
Right.
So he turned around, he kind of worked it out for himself, and he said, "Okay, well, I guess I should probably leave then," because he just wanted to go and do freelance stuff. At this point, we'd grown to about 250K turnover.
Right.
We had a team of four people. But he left the business, and then eventually, sort of a year later, I sold it because I started to move into much more sort of personal development. We were doing workshops. We took a logo design process that was like long and drawn out and condensed it into a one-day workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So we invited the client in, and they were part of the creative process. And through that packaging process, we were charging sort of three or four times the going rate for branding and design. Because it was like, well, if we've got capacity, we'll book you in tomorrow. If we've got a designer available, let's just crack on and do it. You can get involved with the creative process. We'll give you guaranteed deliverables at the end of the day. And I was like, I'm onto something here. And there was no resistance. Like, people just got the whole packaging thing. They got this, like, I can book it tomorrow. It's a day. I get my logo. I get my branding guidelines. I'm like, yeah, you get all of that. And not only that, we'll put a money back guarantee on it. So if we get to the end of the day and you feel like you haven't got value out of it, if you feel like it, you know, then we'll just refund you. It's not a problem. And straight away, everybody's like, yep, snap me up. We'll do this. And, you know, we probably in a year, we were doing about, I don't know, 40 or 50 of these workshops a year. And then I was just like, actually, I want to teach people this process, because that whole packaging, and this is what I allude to in the book, is kind of the almost the three steps which you have to go through in order to kind of package up a service.
Right. So which sort of leads me very nicely to the next question. How do you package up a service to make a product?
Basically, what it comes down to is, like, you've got to think about the questions which you're asking in the first place. So take Russ, for example. When somebody came in for golf lessons, he was just asking things like, so when can you start? What clubs do you play with? You know, how long have you played golf for? So there was no real kind of like outcome. There's no real result that he was kind of talking to them about. So I kept on asking, digging and digging. And then he eventually told me this story about this guy who came in, and he just got a new sales role. I think he was placed in a business with like 2,500 employees or something like that. And his first assignment in his new sales role was to go and have a play a four ball with the CEO of the company. So imagine the pressure. And this guy was just like, all I want to do is like hit it down right down the middle of the fairway on the, off the first tee and 30 yards further than the CEO, because I want him to notice me. It's like, bingo, value proposition. Like, that's why people play golf. It's for the satisfaction. Not just beating people necessarily or driving further than, but the quality, like playing a better game. So we actually came up with then five products. So it wasn't just drive 30 yards further, it was hit off tee more accurately, the short game, so chipping around the green, lower your putting average, lower your handicap. And we had five products there.
Right.
That's the first thing, is like the questions you're asking and how does it relate to the outcomes you're delivering. The second part is then around what we call like the contract. So again, like I'll stick with Russ's example. So I'm just like a spoiler alert. There's going to be no point in people getting hold of the book, actually, but you'll enjoy the story if you get it.
Yeah.
But this is helpful. so the second part then is the contract. So I was like, cool, how long would it take to teach somebody to drive 30 yards fair? And he said, well, if they were to do it consistently, probably like 8 to 10 weeks. I was like, cool, how could we guarantee they do it in 8 weeks? And he said, well, they've got to practice 2 or 3 times in between. It's like, great, there's the contract. Choose your product. You're going to agree to turn up to all 8 lessons. Remember, previously, they were just kind of coming in, drifting away. It's raining, or just, I won't go today. So we said, no, come rain, hail, thunderstorms, whatever. You've got to show up to all 8 lessons. You've got to practice 2 or 3 times in between. Take a selfie of yourself on the, you know, on the driving range or putting green or whatever. And we got them to sign and date it. Now, the thing is, it's not like a legally binding contract. But what's happening at that point is the client is making a commitment to themselves to show up and practice.
Right.
The third part then is pricing. Russ was very open. He said, look, how am I going to make more money out of this? Because he was just like, I want to get out of this little 2-bed semi that I'm in, and I'm, you know, I want a better life for my family. It's like, I've got to make more money. So I said, right, well, what we'll do is, you were charging £25 an hour for your lessons before. So like ballpark 8 times 25 would have been about £200. Said, and like pricing, it is very much to stick a finger in the air and then validate it, like, test it. So we settled on 595. So not masses of money, but enough. And he charges a lot more than that, by the way, now. So 595. And he did the international sign of distress. Oh, I couldn't possibly charge that much. And all the other golf pros will laugh at me. It's like 3 times what they're charging. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, they're selling lessons. You're selling guaranteed results.
Right.
Like, it's a very different thing here. So just hear me out. Like, I've got my gut instinct telling me, just try this out. So he printed off 10 of these contracts, like basic things that I'd sketched out. And he sold 3 packages in the first week.
Right.
So obviously, like, straight away. And like, the thing about it is, and this is the fearless bit. So in that interim period between having the idea, this concept of how we're going to change our product, our service, and validating it, so selling your first one of those packages, that's where the fear creeps in. Because if that takes any amount of time, people are thinking, I've got bills to pay, or what if this doesn't work, or if I don't sell any, what if people, if I pitch it to loads of people and they all say no. So all of the fears start to kick in.
Right.
And so, actually, it's that interim period where you just go, you've just got to go, you will, if you pitch this to 10 people, you'll sell 2 of them.
Right.
So that's, it's just a matter of time. You've just got to wait it out.
I'm not going to ask any more questions of people who actually buy your book, but I just want to just one last question, right? When you talk about, he was very clear about how he wanted a better life for his kids in his family and all that, right? How does desire and drive fit into goal setting for any business? Is it really the bigger your dream, the more gutsy you get?
I kind of talked about like some of the knockbacks you get, especially in the online world as well, which are very like superficial, kind of doesn't really matter. But like all the time as a business owner, well, in life, I think generally, like your energy levels are kind of going up and down in all different aspects of your life. And when something comes along, which kind of starts to kind of become a blockage or barrier or creates fear or whatever it might be, obviously it impacts energy levels. And actually, this is the kind of thing, I think in this modern world, you just got to build up a certain level of resilience in order to overcome those obstacles when they crop up. Right. And actually that has to mean, you know, it can't just be like, oh, I'm going to set up an FBA, like an Amazon business and make loads of money out of it. Like, because people just aren't like passionate about, there are some people who are.
Right.
But like 99% of people who set up like Amazon business or MLM businesses, they're not passionate about the product they're selling. They don't really care about it.
Right.
So the moment a challenge crops up, they're just like, oh, it didn't work.
Right.
And they'll blame the internet. They'll blame like any number of different things.
Right.
But like, imagine if Edison didn't do like 10,000 experiments or whatever it was. Like, we wouldn't have, well, we would end up with light at some point. Somebody would have invented a different version of the light bulb. But that initial incarnation of the incandescent light bulb hinged. Imagine if Edison had just done one experiment. Maybe he electrocuted himself or something. He didn't go quite to plan. And he just goes, oh, do you know what? I'm not going to bother with this whole light thing because it's just not really worth it. Like, imagine what the world would be like. We have to fail, like, repeatedly. And that takes a lot of energy, takes a lot of resilience. And it just, you know, that's what the desire is built around. Edison was just like, I'm gonna get this light bulb thing sorted. I don't care what it takes, I'm going to do it.
And so, Robin, how can people get hold of you and the book?
It's a very good question, actually. I probably should have thought about this beforehand. So first and foremost, you can check out my website, robinwaite.com. That's Robin Waite with an E on the end of it as well. I always have to say that because sometimes people miss out. All my social media handles are Robin M. Waite, M for Mark. I'm happy to give anybody who wants it actually a free copy of the book, because I just want to spread the word and just get it out there. So if anybody's in the UK listening to this, which they possibly might be, they can go to fearless.biz/takeyourshot, TYS promo. So fearless.biz/TYS promo. And anybody can download the PDF from there. But also, if you're in the UK, I'll happily send out a paperback as well. We'll work something out. We might be able to get an audiobook version as well for people if they want to listen to it. But they can support me by A, leaving a review on Amazon. That would be super helpful if they read the book, if I give them a free copy. Or the Kindle's like £3.74. It's like a couple of bucks. It's not very expensive. So, you know, you can always support me by going and buying, not financially, but it helps with the rankings if they go and buy the book on Amazon.
All right. Thanks for speaking to us. It's been really entertaining and educational as well. I was speaking to Robin Waite, talking about his book, Take Your Shot. You've been listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.